Stay tuned for Bob Benyart Live. But first, hi, this is Pastor Bob Benyart with Denver Bible Church. And I've got in front of me a summary of the 66 books of the Bible. Do you think I could get through that in 4 minutes? Let's try it. Genesis is about the creation, the fall, and Israel's birth. Exodus is leaving Egypt and getting the law. Leviticus is priestly laws. Numbers, Israel's census and wandering in the wilderness. Deuteronomy is the retelling of the Mosaic law. Joshua is conquering Canaan, well, almost. Judges is the cycles of spiritual freedom and political bondage. Ruth, a Gentile, marries into the Davidic lineage. 1 Samuel, Israel's kingdom is instituted. 2 Samuel is David reigns. 1 Kings, the kingdom splits into north and south, that's Israel and Judah. 2 Kings, the divided kingdom struggles. 1 Chronicles, David's reign retold. 2 Chronicles, Judah's evil leads to the Babylonian captivity. The book of Ezra is that more Jews return to rebuild the temple. That's from the Babylonian captivity. Nehemiah, the first remnant returns to restore Jerusalem's walls. Esther, in captivity, Jews in Persia saved from extermination. The book of Job, a righteous man labors to understand suffering. Psalms, Israel's hymnal. Proverbs, Solomon's wise sayings. Ecclesiastes, backslidden Solomon's confusion. Song of Songs, that's a romance that portrays God's love for Israel. Isaiah, the coming Messiah will suffer and rule. Jeremiah, a second captivity left behind the sorrowful prophet. Lamentations, Israel's divorce decree from God. Ezekiel, in exile, explaining Israel's judgment and hope. Daniel, in exile, vision of God conquering Gentile kingdoms. Hosea, northern Israel's sin leads to the Assyrian captivity. The Assyrians carried them all away. Joel, in the great tribulation, God will pour out his spirit. Amos, Renaissance Israel to fall before the Messiah comes. Obadiah, God will destroy Edom and exalt his own kingdom. Jonah, a reluctant prophet converts the Assyrian capital. Micah, doom is coming except for the Messiah's birth in Bethlehem. Nahum, the destruction of Nineveh is predicted. Habakkuk, the just shall live by faith in the righteous judge. Zephaniah, Judah's superficial repentance will not avert judgment. Haggai, judgment for the delay of rebuilding the temple. Zechariah, temple rebuilt before the Messiah is cut off and then exalted. Malachi, repent, prepare the way of the Lord. Now, I don't think I could get through the New Testament in the remaining 1 minute. I could try, though. Matthew, King Jesus, son of David. Mark, Jesus the servant with no genealogy. Luke, Jesus the man, son of Adam. John, God becomes flesh. Acts, the kingdom wanes as the body grows. Romans, Paul's theological treatise. 1 Corinthians, correcting the body of Christ. 2 Corinthians, defending Paul's apostleship against legalists. Galatians, Paul's gospel of grace over Peter's gospel of circumcision. Ephesians, the dispensation of grace given to Paul. Philippians, the resurrection yields joy in suffering. Colossians, God nailed the law to the cross. 1 Thessalonians, comfort yourselves knowing that the Lord will return. 2 Thessalonians, the body is not in and will not enter into the tribulation. We're running out of time. What's going to hit first, the tribulation or the end of this update segment? I guess the end of the segment. It's 10 seconds away. All right, we'll finish this another night. And now, stay tuned for Bob Benyart Live.
Service with the weekend.
brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. If you live in the Denver area, if you can hear this live, then you're close enough to come on out and join us. We are going to go to an abortionist home. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving, right? Happy Thanksgiving to all of you tuning in right now. And, of course, we give thanks to God for everything that he's given us, for life itself. We're so thankful to him. And then even though we rebelled against him, he loved us enough to forgive us of our sins and sent Jesus Christ, who paid the penalty that we would otherwise have to pay. So if we trust in Jesus Christ, then he has paid for our sin, and we could live forever with God in heaven. That's the gospel. That's the Christian gospel. Well, part of the gospel is knowing that you're a sinner and that you need to be forgiven. And in America, as in much of the world, the most wicked things we do are the things we brag about. We brag about sexual immorality. It used to be against the law. Now, not only is it legal, but we brag about it. And the killing of unborn children. We have parades and people march for choice. And homosexuality, they have pride marches down Broadway. So when people know that there is right and wrong, then they have a better chance of recognizing that they do things wrong, that they're sinners. And a person cannot get saved unless they know that they're a sinner. And when the most evil things people do are considered to be rights and honorable behaviors, then we Christians, we have a really hard time preaching the gospel. So that's one of the reasons that we fight against things like immorality and abortion and socialism, because we're trying to teach people the difference between right and wrong. But also, babies are being killed by abortionists who work for Planned Parenthood and other abortion mills, and they're getting paid money to kill innocent babies who are sleeping, dreaming, waking, sucking their thumbs, playing with their toes in the womb, and they're being killed. So each holiday, we here at Bob and Yurt Live, we sponsor our holiday abortionist home visit. You know, it's good to go out and visit people on the holidays. And so that's what we do. And tomorrow's a holiday. We do this 8 holidays out of the year. And for the past, how many years has it been? We've hit most holidays for more than 10 years now. More than 10 years. 12 years? At least 12 years. We've hit most holidays. So tomorrow is Thanksgiving. And if you'd like to go with us, you're cordially invited. We will meet at a Winchell's Donuts at, let's see, where is it? Evans and Monaco, down in Southeast Denver. Southeast Denver. And Evans and Monaco, there's a Winchell's Donuts. And we'll meet there at 9 a.m. 9 a.m. And we'll head over to an abortionist who kills babies for Planned Parenthood. And his name is Dr. Edward Patrick, I always pronounce it wrong, O'Loughlin. Edward Patrick O'Loughlin. So we invite you to come on out and join us. There'll be a handful of us from Denver Bible Church. We'll have a few guys. And we'd love to have you there. It's early enough. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving, so most likely you're going to have a Thanksgiving meal, as we are. We're going to be with our immediate family and joining our friends and their family up in Thornton. But, you know, you don't eat a Thanksgiving meal till the middle of the afternoon. So this will be 9 in the morning, and we'll be done by 10 o'clock. And not only is it an important time for Christians to try to save children, unborn children, from being killed, but it's a neat time of fellowship and friendship. We have the neatest conversations. We talk about God, the Bible, theology, morality, activism, the Christian life, evolution, creation, whatever's on somebody's mind. We just have a really good time. We walk. You have to keep walking. And the in Arapahoe County, the county commissioners passed a law. You have to walk 666 feet in one direction before you could turn around and go back in front of the abortionist house. So you have to keep walking one way or the other way. And the sheriff's department, they've actually put marks on the road to indicate how far 666 feet is. So anyway, we know all the rules, and it's very safe. I mean, there are no guarantees in life, but it's very safe. We've been doing this for many years. And you're invited to come on out. Now, what is the goal of protesting at the abortionist home? What's the goal of that? You could give me a call if you have any thoughts on why would you go to an abortionist house? Do you think it's effective? Do you think it's not effective? Our phone number here is 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Does it make sense to protest abortion, the killing of unborn children, at an abortionist home on the holidays? Christmas morning, New Year's Eve, or New Year's Day, I guess, in the morning. You know, when a typical abortionist is having his hangover, we're there Sunday morning telling people that an abortionist lives in the house in the neighborhood and that he should stop killing kids. All right. That's if I'd like to know what your thoughts are on the effectiveness, the validity of going to an abortionist home to protest. So our phone number, 1-800-836-9278. You could give your opinion. And now what I want to do, and remember that invitation is out tomorrow morning. Set your alarm. Make sure you're up by 8 o'clock. Come on out. Meet us at the Winchell's Donuts. Hey, if you come a little bit before 9, we'll get to have coffee together. You know, coffee, donuts. Some people have donuts, milk, juice. Even at Winchell's, we have a good time. We know the guys who run Winchell's. We've been going there for so many years. And in a one-year period, we didn't go every holiday. We went every Saturday. It was pretty – that was an intense year a few years ago. Every single Saturday, in addition to every holiday. All right. Let's we're going to go to a break here in 10 seconds. In Littleton, Dale, could you hang on through the break?
Yes.
All right. We'll be right back with Dale. And also, you can feel free to call in. Tell us what you think about an abortionist home visit. 800-836-9278.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart with a live commercial break. Let me tell you about a couple of our Bible study albums you can get from us on audio tape. We've got the Exodus Code. That's an album from out of the book of Exodus about God's justice system. And it will help you evaluate our government, our politicians, our laws, because it's so cool to look at God's justice system and see how he recommended a justice system would function. And then we have a more well-rounded background and education, and we could make better assessments of current laws and initiatives and ballot issues. Let's see. Let's look at another Bible study album here. Oh, this is one of my favorites, Predestination and Free Will. This is all about prophecy in the Bible, choice. Is there such a thing as free will? Time. Is time real? Does God change? Is there time in heaven? So many interesting topics are covered in this Predestination and Free Will. I think you'll love it. As with all of our materials, we have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So you could go to the web at kgov.com and check out more about what these albums are about and other albums. Or call us at 800-8-NYART. Bob Enyart here, 1-800-8-ENYART, and we're going right to the phones. Let me just give you this date. November 2nd, 1997, the New York Times ran a three-page article that was promoted on their front cover of their Sunday edition, arguing that it should be legal to kill a baby after he's born through the first month for any reason. Three-page article, New York Times. All right, let's go to Littleton, Colorado. Dale, speak your mind.
Yeah, I had a question. Do you ever have the opportunity to protest at the Butcher of Boulder's?
Well,
what's his name? Warren
Hearn up in Boulder.
Yeah.
He wrote one of the first abortion textbooks, if not the first, called Abortion Practice. And we've protested at his abortion mill many times. And people have gone to his house, but his house is real secluded.
Oh, so it doesn't have the effect.
No, his house is real secluded, and you can't even see his house from the road. It's up a country road.
How many baby killers are there in Metro Denver, do you know?
Well, Planned Parenthood, you know, most abortion mills have a hard time replacing a retiring abortionist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing, of course.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it is. And that's why we do the abortionist home visits.
That's right.
We want to discourage young medical students from getting into the abortion field.
Yeah, well, you know, as a father, I always told my kids, if you ever became a Democrat, I'd shoot you.
Ah! Now, that's a little stern there, Dale.
Well, I wanted to get the point across.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going from just informal recollection over the past 10 years. In 10 years, I'd say I've been aware of about a half a dozen different abortion mills or doctors' offices where they do abortions. And so there's probably a dozen at least working abortionists in Denver.
How sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
And we're only going to one,
mm-hmm.
Edward Patrick O'Loughlin. And he's worked at Planned Parenthood for many years.
How do you spell his name?
Let's see. O'Loughlin. O apostrophe L-O-U-G-H-L-I-N.
What would cause someone to do that for a living?
Well, I'd say two things that I could think of. One is a rebellion against God.
Yes.
And two is the love of money. Because abortion is extremely profitable. Extremely profitable because it costs $400 and some, and the procedure takes about 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
To destroy a life.
Yeah, and what they do is they have nurses, aides, and staff members line up the women. It's like an assembly line. They get them ready in their little rooms there at Planned Parenthood at 20th and Vine in Denver. And the abortionist goes in each room and spends virtually no time with each mother, and he's in there just long enough to kill the baby, and he's out and into the next room.
That is so sad.
Yeah, it is. It's a tragedy.
Well, if I get the opportunity, I'll meet you there.
Hey, that's great, Dale. Thank you. Very encouraging. Appreciate that. 1-800-8-NYART. That's at tomorrow morning, Thanksgiving, 9 a.m. at Winchell's and Donuts. Winchell's Donuts. At Winchell's Donuts at Evans and Monaco, 9 a.m. And then we drive from there, we drive to the abortionist home which is a five-minute ride out east of there toward Aurora. And, you know, we do have, even though it's a sad reason that we have to be there, we actually have a good time of fellowship. It's enjoyable. So if you could come on out, we'd be thrilled. That's 9 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Winchell's Donuts at Evans and Monaco to protest a Planned Parenthood abortionist at his home. And his neighbors, they're not too thrilled about the protest. I wonder if that accurately represents their view. Not overly enamored with us, I would say. But, you know, one of the goals is that child killing should not happen with tranquility. There shouldn't be social peace when children are being slaughtered. There should be turmoil. And the people who live or work near an abortion mill should be miserable. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. And the people who live near an abortionist home should be miserable over that fact. They should despise their neighbor who kills babies for money. But in America, neighbors will virtually always support their local abortionist. Virtually always. And so the goal is not so much to get the abortionist to change his mind. That'd be great, but that's not a very practical goal. And not that everything you do has to be practical. It has to be right. It has to be morally right. But sometimes you fight battles you can't win because you have to fight the battle, because you should fight the battle. So not everything you do is done because it's practical. You do things because of principle also. But there's another reason to do this, and it's because it works. It really does work. It really is practical. In that we've seen reports in the New York Times and national news stories of how hard it is for abortion mills to replace a retiring abortionist. Most abortionists are white-headed men. Most, you know, isn't that weird? It's the woman's movement, supposedly, and it's the men making all the money killing the babies. All right. I want to change the topic here. I just got, Ken Ham has a creationist ministry, Against Evolution. Ken Ham is from Australia. He's a real well-known anti-evolutionist. And he's building a museum, a creation museum. And he's got an excellent magazine out for families called Creation Magazine, a monthly full-color magazine. And he also has a quarterly publication that's called TJ, Technical Journal. And all the articles in Technical Journal, they're not all written by scientists, but many of them are written by degreed scientists, working scientists, teachers at colleges and universities. But I'd like to give you a few quotes from some of the I got two issues right here from this year, from 2003. And they're just so cool. This one here, the second volume from this year, 2003. I just open it up. And I'm in the first couple pages here. There's an article about fossilized bird tracks. Bird tracks that are fossilized. And these bird footprints, they got pictures of them in here. And you could see 100 bird footprints and a close-up here. And they're bird footprints. That's what they are. But the problem for the evolutionist, and this is so funny, there's so much like this in the world, only the evolutionist, they don't put it all together for you. And you got to do some work to figure it all out. But evolutionists say that birds evolved from dinosaurs. When did the dinosaurs live? 60 million years ago. And what dinosaur evolved into a bird? Well, their main candidate, they say, is Archaeopteryx. Now, the Archaeopteryx story in and of itself is not true. Archaeopteryx did not evolve into birds. It wasn't a bird. Here's what's funny. The evolution magazine called Nature. You've heard of Nature? It's one of the leading science magazines in the country. Nature, from an article from last year, 2002, talks about these very well-preserved and abundant fossil footprints that sure do look like bird tracks. I'm showing them to the show engineer. He's nodding, yep, look like bird tracks, all right. And the problem with these, they found these in Argentina in two strata that are separated by 10 centimeters. And they say that this strata is dated at 55 million years before Archaeopteryx. So 55 million years before Archaeopteryx, the dinosaur that supposedly evolved into all of our birds, you've got bird tracks, as clear as could be. Any bird brain could see that they're bird tracks. And I've got a quote here from that Nature article. The age of this strata has been established on the basis of its fossil content, because that's the primary way evolutionists and geologists date strata, is based on the theory of evolution. They think evolution happened. They think certain animals evolved at a certain time. And so when they find those animals' fossils in rocks, they say they know how old the rocks are. So that's the first thing they mention. The age of this strata has been established on the basis of its fossil content and a radiometric dating, which doesn't work, and is further supported by comparison with the well-dated, some other formation down in Argentina. So here's another case for the evolutionist in which the child is older than the parents. That's so funny. That's just a crack up and a half. And these are bird footprints. And now they're not 100 million years old. They're not. But that's the evolutionist time frame. They think that when you look at the strata on the crust of the earth, that it shows you millions of years of history. And it doesn't. It shows you rapidly deposited sediments from the flood. For the most part, that's what the strata on the earth shows you. All right, so that's one article in here. Okay, what else do we have? Let's see. I'm just paging through to just randomly give you some idea from this creationist publication called Technical Journal, TJ. It's a quarterly. It's really great. Here, they're talking about the fossil record and the fact, that man did not evolve. And they're looking at this one skull, Proconsul Africanus. And they point out in here that there's no evidence of any ape losing its tail in the fossil record. Of course not. And what else? Oh, they point out that volcanic rocks give dates much older than the true age of the rock. If you radiometrically date a rock, it's supposed to tell you when that rock formed, when it hardened, when it solidified. And they give examples of lava flows in New Zealand from 50 years ago that are dated up to 3.5 million years old. We'll be back after this. Bob Enyard here. For those of you on KGov, I apologize that you've had to wait to listen to these shows. You couldn't listen to them daily as you can with most of our shows because we've had a difficulty with our internet service provider, our hosting company, Interland, and we are not able to update any of our shows. Not only can we not add new shows, we can't delete some real old shows to make room for the new shows. We have an administrative problem with the server. And so we're trying to get that resolved. And, well, if you're hearing this on the web, it's been resolved. Hey, this is Bob Enyart. Howdy to our listeners who've just joined us in Denver. You know, the first minute of this bottom of the hour break, we spend it with our listeners on the web at kgov.com. And we want to give a warm welcome to all of you who listen in Colorado on the air, on the radio, to check out our website, kgov.com. And we've got a few sister sites. We've got enyart.com, which is run by one of our longtime friends of the program. We don't run enyart.com, but one of our listeners does. And then we've got kgov.com, which is our official website, and denverbiblechurch.org, and theologyonline.com. Theologyonline.com is just the neatest website for talking about the Bible, God, theology, current events, your life. And it's a little easier to interact with people there than on a talk show. On a talk show, you know, we give people a lot of time usually to make their points, but Theology Online, you can have ongoing conversations, think through issues, look things up, get multiple opinions to your ideas. So you might want to check that out, and kgov.com. One 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And we're going through this creationist technical journal called TJ, put out by Ken Ham's group, Answers in Genesis. And before I continue, just want to reiterate my offer for you to come on out and join us tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We're meeting at a Winchell's Donuts in southeast Denver at Evans and Monaco. And if you go I-25 and Evans, it's east of there, a mile or so, and Evans and Monaco. And then we'll go to Planned Parenthood Abortionist to his home for our abortionist holiday home visits. We've been doing this for about 12 years or so, 8 holidays a year. We've missed a few holidays, but we've been there for most of them. And our goal is to discourage medical students from getting into the child-killing business. And if you're a med student and you're promising, you're bright, you're going to have a good career ahead of you, you can make a lot of money, and you're trying to decide whether to go into dermatology or abortion, which one? And you think, well, dermatologists do not have wacko domestic terrorists outside of their homes on Christmas morning. Dermatologists, that doesn't happen to them. They don't even have people in the middle of the night with an emergency pimple or anything like that. Whereas if you become an abortionist, who knows how miserable your life may be. And so usually the lowest of the low become abortionists, and even their medical doctor friends feel weird about, you know, hanging around with an abortionist. But so we want to make sure that medical students have a reason to shy away from becoming child killers, paid killers. So that's why we give up time on our holidays and been doing it for 12 years. And hey, come on out. We will have a good time together. We will. It'll be fun. I would love to meet you. All right, let's see here. Okay, so this we're looking at Ken Ham's TJ, Technical Journal on Creation Against Evolution. And they make one point here in this article about how old these rocks are with the skull in it. And they say that volcanic rocks give radiometric dates that are much older than their true age. And that's well documented. And there are examples from Hawaii where lava flows from 100 and 200 years ago are dated millions of years old. And they cite, in this article, they cite particular examples of from lava flows at Mount Ngaruhoe, New Zealand. Now, we've been to New Zealand, but we didn't see any volcanoes. Well, we saw old volcanoes, but not any erupting volcanoes. In fact, New Zealand is all volcanoes, and they're all covered with grass. It's really an amazing sight. At any rate, these lava flows give erroneous dates from potassium-argon analysis. That's they know that as potassium breaks down into argon through normal radioactive decay, then they measure these elements and they make some assumptions and then they date. And they date and they should come up with an age for when that rock first hardened. And when they date rocks from this lava flow, they get anywhere from 250,000 years old to 3.5 million years old. However, these rocks were observed by human beings to have cooled from lavas between 25 and 50 years ago. So if the rock is 25 years old, 50 years old, and you're using your scientific dating method, and you say, oh, it's 2 million years old. Oh, very bright. And then this next article is about pseudogenes in your DNA. That's what's so fun about this. They've got so many different disciplines in these technical journals. They're just really great. But pseudogenes, you know, in your DNA, they say we've got a lot of junk DNA and pseudogenes, that is genes that long ago, evolutionarily speaking, long ago broke down and they don't do anything. It's all junk and pseudogenes. They were genes and now they're all mutated and they're junk and they don't do anything. And for example, they don't form proteins. A lot of your DNA, copies of your DNA are taken and they're transferred and then they're copied. They're used as an instruction set to make proteins, these little chemical machines to do things. Well, pseudogenes, they're not copied to make genes. They're just hanging out there. And they look like they're broken genes. And I remember Dr. Eugenie Scott, one of the country's leading anti-creationists. She runs an organization that the purpose of the organization is to oppose creation, especially being taught in schools. And so I debated Dr. Eugenie Scott. She was on PBS, public TV, did a nationwide debate, creation evolution. And a few weeks after that, I think it was just a few weeks, she spent a whole hour on Bob and Yurt Live, and I debated her one-on-one. It was fun. She's a physical anthropologist, and I'm a talk show host. So it should have been a slaughter, and she should have been able to wipe up the floor with me, being a scientist and all. But we're still selling the debate on video here. Bob versus the evolutionary scientist. And it's a fun video. And at the end of the video, she said, well, I don't debate. She said, I'm just sitting here with my cat. What does that mean? What are you talking about, lady? Anyway, it went very well. But during the debate, she said, well, we know all about DNA now. And we know that this junk DNA and we're just like chimpanzees. And I said to her, we know all about DNA? This is back in 1996. It's still a good video. We know all about DNA? Well, we know most of what we're going to learn about DNA. I said, can I write this down? Dr. Eugenie Scott, I got to date this. And I want to make sure I write it down verbatim that Dr. Eugenie Scott says today that we know about all there is to know about DNA. I said, because I'm just a talk show host, Christian creationist, and I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface of the code and what it all is. Oh, no, we're 98%+ the same as chimpanzees. And you know what's funny? The chimp genome is 10% larger than the human genome. So how can we be 98% the same? And this junk DNA, and oh, and by the way, the evolutionists, they don't say 98% anymore. They gave up. They gave up on that a year ago, and they know it's much more of a difference between humans and chimps than 98%. And there's 3 billion base pairs of amino acids in a human DNA, so 5% difference is a difference of hundreds of millions of amino acids. It's all so interesting. Well, let's see, 10% would be 300 million. So, but at any rate, this article on pseudogenes, it turns out that these pseudogenes are not pseudo, that we're finding out that the things we thought were just junk, just broken genes, have very important functions. And this article is a summary from another article in Nature from this year, 2003. And this, here's a quote from Nature, 2003. Pseudogenes are produced from functional genes during evolution, it's believed, and they're thought to be simply molecular fossils. However, the unexpected discovery of biological function for one pseudogene challenges that popular belief. It turns out that the pseudogene, it's not turned into a protein, but it absorbs biochemical matter. And by absorbing that matter, it helps regulate the cell. So it does. It has a function that's totally unlike any function that we have observed for DNA. And the genetic scientists are thinking, wow, this is really complicated. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-836-9278. Longmont, Colorado. Ken, speak your mind. Hello, Ken. Ken, are you there? All right, we can't hear Ken.
Yes, I can hear you now.
All right, go right ahead, Ken.
Yes, I just kind of curious. I was listening to your show. What do they do? It kind of struck me that they had, like, you couldn't walk within 660 feet of this doctor's house.
Well, the rule is, it used to be that we protested and we stayed right in front of his home. And then counter-protesters were showing up. Pro-abortion, feminists, liberals, atheists, witches, lesbians. And it really became quite a zoo in front of the abortionist house week after week. And so the county commissioners passed a law I'll tell you about right after this break. Bob Enyard here with a Christmas recommendation. If you're going to get yourself or someone else a Christmas gift, think about these two videos together as a set. Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, a great video. It's on VHS or DVD. Against Evolution, the best video I've ever seen against evolution. And The Real Mount Sinai. Now, that's only available on DVD. You could give one or the other or both to a friend, depending on how much you like them, or a relative. And what's so neat about the two is the first one shows that there must be a creator. The first one is not about the Bible, but it shows how evolution cannot be true. There has to be a supremely intelligent creator. The second one is The Real Mount Sinai is extraordinary evidence that the Bible story is true. And even the miracles in the Bible are true. Evidence, archaeological evidence that remains to this day. It is so neat. So that's what I would do, I think. If I had somebody I want to give a Christmas gift to, whether a believer or an unbeliever, those two, you might pick one or the other. We've got other great videos. In fact, you could check them out on the web at kgov.com. You could order one video for $24.95 or five videos, and the price goes all the way down to $19 each. Or 10 videos, and it comes down to $18 each. Now, that's a deal, right? $18 each. Now, and you could even get a lower per video price if you order 20. Depends on how many friends you have. Most people don't have that many friends, I don't think, for Christmas gifts. If you had 20 friends, you could do that, actually. But I think 10 is more practical. And $18 for a gift, hey, that's a pretty reasonable price. So give us a call at 800-8-NYART or go online at kgov.com. Check out our store, and these videos will make excellent gifts. We're back, Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART in Longmont. Ken, go ahead. We're still with you.
All right. It kind of amazed me that they – I just wonder if they did a 660-foot
well,
that you couldn't go there. I mean, with the number 666, it's ironic that they did that.
Ken, I have to confess, the number that they put in the law is 660 feet.
Oh, okay.
But ever since they did that, even when I was being interviewed on a local Channel 12 TV show, I think it was, we've always said 666 feet. And most people think it's 666 feet, which we think is a little funny. But they said 660 feet. And so the sheriff's department went out and they marked it 660. You know, and it's easy to turn 660 into 666. Just a little hook on the zero there.
I just wonder if they did that on purpose. But what do they do to you if you, like, if you protest the abortion clinic? Is that a felony?
Well, no. You're allowed to protest. It's legal to protest. In fact, there are protests at Planned Parenthood in Denver 5 days a week since the late 80s. Every day they've been open, we've had Christians out there trying to save the moms and the babies going in there. And, no, it's perfectly legal to protest at an abortion mill and at an abortionist home. But in Arapahoe County, they passed a few regulations, like you have to keep walking and you can't have real huge signs. See, we used to bring these big signs 4 feet by 5 feet. And then we got out of control and we brought signs that were about 8 feet long and 8 feet high and 20 feet long. And there were these huge signs. So we probably just pushed our luck too far. And so they now outlawed large signs. And you can't yell. And you have to keep walking.
So I've never protested anything. But I was listening to this. I listen to Christian radio all the time, different channels. I just got thinking. And it just kind of... I wouldn't mind going to jail for protesting that. My daughter just became pregnant. They've been trying for, the daughter-in-law has been trying for years.
Oh.
And in church they said, oh, you'll be a grandpa in a year. And I said, no, I'm already a grandfather because that baby's already alive. And I want to, you know, that's just how I feel about it.
Yeah, well, you're right. And you're staking your claim to being a grandpa.
Yep.
That's right. I've said on the air, I'm a grandfather, and our son and daughter-in-law, they haven't delivered yet, but Anthony and Willa are going to have a baby soon, and so I'm a grandpa.
Yeah,
first
this
time.
This baby's already got a soul. It's already living.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of funny because they were taking fertility drugs, and I told them a year ago to quit doing that and just let God have his way, and they got off of it about 3 months ago, and then all of a sudden it was God's time to... for them to have a baby. They got off all these drugs and quit going to the doctor.
All right.
She ends up pregnant when it was God's turn, when he was ready for it.
Hey, Ken, I'm thrilled that they're pregnant. But let's just add for other people listening in the audience, if you're saying that you only get pregnant when it's God's time, then for hundreds of thousands of women, it was God's time when they got on fertility drugs. Because fertility drugs have dramatically increased a woman's chance of getting pregnant. So I wouldn't say it's generally good counsel to tell a Christian, if you are having trouble becoming pregnant, don't use fertility drugs.
No, but I think when God's ready for them to have the baby, that it's going to happen. Whether, because the fertility drugs didn't work on her. So
well,
she got off.
Hey, Ken, but what,
and I don't disagree with them. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah,
that's what you really want to do. But.
Yeah, we can't extrapolate from one person's life or experience to theology, right? Because the point I made is if it was God's will when you're going to get pregnant, then he apparently, his will goes along with fertility clinics. Because
mm-hmm.
that's when people who can't get pregnant, that's when so many of them get pregnant. So anyway, we just like to think through a lot of these things that Christians say so readily, sometimes without wanting to, we cause problems for other Christians, because some married couple might be listening and thinking we're having trouble having a baby and we're about to go for fertility treatment. And now we're hearing that maybe it's a lack of faith. And so maybe we shouldn't do it. And I would say that's putting them through an unnecessary turmoil.
Well, I didn't mean that. I just,
yeah,
they
I
were trying it and it wasn't working. So I was trying to counsel them to tell them, you know, well, maybe they need to go a different route.
Yeah.
But one thing I really get tired when people judge people, because that's breaking one of the Ten Commandments. So sin's a sin, but breaking the Ten Commandments is judging somebody. And I didn't do that. I was doing that as a father.
Yeah.
Trying to counsel them that maybe they need to step back a while.
Yeah. Well,
I believe, you know, God has his hands with the doctors and with our knowledge, and I think we're supposed to use it.
Right, exactly.
Hopefully for the good.
Exactly, that's right. Hey, Ken, also remember that Jesus said in John 7:24, Jesus commanded us to judge with righteous judgment. And the Apostle Paul said that he who is spiritual judges all things because we have the mind of Christ. And he said, do you not know that we saints will judge the angels, that we believers will judge the world? And he said, I'm ashamed of you because you're not judging. And so there are quite a few places in the Bible where God does command us to judge. Like, for example, that abortion is murder. We have to make a judgment. Or if somebody's trying to sell drugs to kids on a playground, we have to say, that's wrong. Don't do it. So the
I
whole
agree with you. You have to stand up for what's right.
Exactly. Ken, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. I appreciate that. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. All right, so how do we get from that back to pseudogenes and junk DNA? So it turns out that pseudogenes, that they were sure, and they give an example in this article of one gene. What is this a gene? What animal is this? Is this in a snail or something? No, it's a gene called Macarin-1-P1. And they said, by all accounts, this gene is totally crippled, or it should be crippled. It just should not be able to function because it's, you know, when they're decoding genes in DNA, they have these codons and these stop genes, these stop sequences. It's like a gene keeps going until there's a certain pattern of amino acids, and that means you're at the end. It's like saying the end in DNA talk. And so they see these genes, and they look like genes, sort of. In other words, they look like the instructions to build a protein, except scattered throughout this pseudogene, they find these stop genes. And they find so many of them scattered throughout that the gene can't work, because if they try to build a protein out of it, it would stop. It wouldn't work. And so they say, well, these are pseudogenes. Maybe they used to be genes in evolution, and they're now broke, and they're not genes. And it turns out now that this one pseudogene, according to the latest science on this, their findings have demonstrated that this thing has a regulatory role. and it's significant on how it helps to regulate what's happening in the gene, in the cell. So here's Eugenie Scott, of all people, telling me in 1996 that scientists saying, well, we know most of what we're going to learn on DNA. Oh, yeah, right, Jeannie. I dream of Jeannie. All right, so that's one of these issues, and here's another. This is a 2003, Volume 1. So this is a quarterly publication by Ken Ham. You might want to subscribe to this, or maybe you start with Creation. Answers in Genesis on the web, order their Creation magazine, which is so great. And here they have wood in Canada, northeast Canada, way up north, way up far north to where it's like the average temperature is minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit. And the average cold month, it's minus 36, and it gets as cold as minus 67 degrees. That's cold. And they have wood buried in, and they take this wood, and this wood has been buried for forever, for a long time. And they dig it up, and they have trees of about 3 feet in diameter. And that you can cut the wood with an axe and burn it. And the evolutionists and the geologists say it's from the Eocene era or period, and it's about 45 million years old. No, sorry, it's not 45 million years old. And they study the tree rings in these stumps, and the rings are large. They're generally 3 millimeters wide and up to 10 millimeters wide for a single ring, and they show no indication of temperature or water stress. And so these are probably trees that were destroyed during Noah's flood. And that's really, really cool that we get to learn about these things and study. I mean, you probably don't learn in a science class at your local public high school that 45-million-year-old trees can be burned in your fireplace. They don't tell you. They just seem to leave that part out. And then they have strata that are packed filled with, like, coal and leaf and stumps. Vertical strata. And you know what's interesting? That layer after layer of this twigs and leaves and coal and all. And the leaves and twigs at the bottom of each layer are preserved as well as the leaves and twigs at the top of each layer. What does that tell you? That tells you that those layers were all deposited rapidly. And there's virtually no decay. So, you know, the creationists know how coal seams formed. How do coal seams form? We know. The geologists don't know. Why would there be 20 layers of coal seam separated by limestone deposits? Each coal seam, you know, so many feet thick and varying, and 20 in a row, 20 layers in a row, separate. Why does that happen? How did that happen? Over 100 square miles. How does that happen? We know. The geologists don't know. We know. They don't know. We know. They don't know. Why don't they know? Because they don't believe the Bible and Noah's flood. And that's how the coal seams were formed. Someday, call in if you want more information on that. Hey, we're out of time. I'll see you tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock at Winchell's and Donuts. Winchell's Donuts at Evans and Monaco. This is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right.